If you have your Bible, you can open it to Exodus chapter 2. At the time when the Israelites were slaves in Egypt, Pharaoh decided that they posed a potential threat if war should break out, and so he devised several schemes in which to diminish the population of the Israelites. First, through the efforts of some of the Jewish midwives, who he instructed to kill the male babies when they were being born. And when that plan failed, he then instructed the people that if they found a Hebrew male child, baby, they were to throw that baby into the Nile River to kill it. It was about this point in time that a very influential person was born. And we read about this in Exodus chapter 2, beginning in verse 1. It says, "Now a man from the house of Levi went and married a daughter of Levi. The woman conceived and bore a son, and when she saw that he was beautiful, she hid him for 3 months. But when she could hide him no longer, she got him a wicker basket and covered it over with tar and pitch. And then she put the child into it and set it among the reeds by the bank of the Nile. And his sister stood at a distance to find out what would happen to him. And the daughter of Pharaoh came down to bathe at the Nile, with her maidens walking alongside the Nile. And she saw the basket among the reeds and sent her maid, and she brought it to her. And when she opened it, she saw the child, and behold, the boy was crying, and she had pity on him and said, 'This is one of the Hebrews' children.' Then his sister said to Pharaoh's daughter, 'Shall I go and call a nurse for you from among the Hebrew women that she may nurse the child for you?' And Pharaoh's daughter said to her, 'Go ahead.' So the girl went and called the child's mother. And then Pharaoh's daughter said to her, 'Take this child away and nurse him for me, and I will give you your wages.' So the woman took the child and nursed him. And the child grew, she brought him to Pharaoh's daughter, and he became her son. And she named him Moses and said, 'Because I drew him out of the water.'" Today we're going to continue looking at some of the great characters of the Old Testament, and today we are going to look at Moses. His story from the time of his birth that we've just read here all the way to his burial is found in the books of Exodus through Deuteronomy. And there is so much that we could talk about in regards to Moses, as unlike some of the previous characters that we've looked at, he is indeed what I would call a main character in the history of Israel. He is the first real leader of the nation. He functioned as the lawgiver, he functioned as a prophet, he functioned as a judge, as well as many more things. In fact, it's interesting to me that Moses seems to be mentioned or referenced more in the New Testament writings than any other Old Testament character, even more than King David or Abraham. And just as Moses, the name, means to draw out, we are going to try to draw out some valuable lessons that we can learn from this man of God. We certainly aren't going to look at every aspect of his life today, but simply hit some of the highlights. And in that regard, just so we have kind of a big picture, I think that we'll start with Stephen's summary of the history of Israel in his sermon in Acts chapter 7. We'll focus in mainly just on what he says about Moses, but it'll kind of help us to have this big picture in mind as we look at some of the finer details of Moses' life. So turn with me to Acts chapter 7, and we'll begin in verse 17. Stephen is preaching here, and he says, "But as the time of the promise was approaching, which God had assured to Abraham, the people increased and multiplied in Egypt, until there arose another king over Egypt who knew nothing about Joseph. It was he who took shrewd advantage of our race and mistreated our fathers so that they would expose their infants and they would not survive. It was at this time that Moses was born. He was lovely in the sight of God, and he was nurtured 3 months in his father's home. And after he had been set outside, Pharaoh's daughter took him away and nurtured him as her own son. And Moses was educated in all the learning of the Egyptians, and he was a man of power in words and deeds. But when he was approaching the age of 40, it entered his mind to visit his brethren, the sons of Israel. And when he saw one of them being treated unjustly, he defended him and took vengeance for the oppressed by striking down the Egyptian. And he supposed that his brethren understood that God was granting them deliverance through him, but they did not understand. And on the following day, he appeared to them as they were fighting together, and he tried to reconcile them in peace, saying, 'Men, you are brethren. Why do you injure one another?' But the one who was injuring his neighbor pushed him away, saying, "Who made you a ruler and judge over us? You do not mean to kill me as you killed the Egyptian yesterday, do you?" And at this remark, Moses fled and became an alien in the land of Midian, where he became the father of two sons. And after 40 years had passed, an angel appeared to him in the wilderness of Mount Sinai in the flame of a burning thorn bush. When Moses saw it, he marveled at the sight, and as he approached to look more closely, there came the voice of the Lord, "I am the God of your fathers, the God of Abraham, the God of Isaac and Jacob." Moses shook with fear and would not venture to look. But the Lord said to him, "Take off the sandals from your feet, for the place on which you are standing is holy ground. I have certainly seen the oppression of my people in Egypt, and I have heard their groans, and I have come down to rescue them. Come now, and I will send you to Egypt." This Moses, whom they disowned, saying, "Who made you a ruler and a judge?" is the one whom God sent to be both a ruler and a deliverer of the people with the help of the angel who appeared to him in the thorn bush. This man led them out, performing wonders and signs in the land of Egypt and in the Red Sea and in the wilderness for 40 years. This is the Moses who said to the sons of Israel, "God will raise up for you a prophet like me from your brethren." This is the one who was in the congregation in the wilderness together with the angel who was speaking to him on Mount Sinai, and who was with our fathers, and he received living oracles to pass on to you. Our fathers were unwilling to be obedient to him, but repudiated him, and in their hearts turned back to Egypt, saying to Aaron, "Make for us gods who will go before us, for this Moses who led us out of the land of Egypt, we do not know what happened to him." And at that time they made a calf and brought a sacrifice to the idol and were rejoicing in the works of their hand. But God turned away and delivered them up to serve the hosts of heaven. As it is written in the books of the prophets, "It was not to me that you offered victims and sacrifices 40 years in the wilderness, was it, O house of Israel? You also took along the tabernacle of Molech and the star of the god of Ramphah, the images which you made to worship. I also will remove you beyond Babylon. Our fathers had the tabernacle of testimony in the wilderness, just as he who spoke to Moses directed him to make it according to the pattern which he had seen." We can also turn over to the book of Hebrews, because the Hebrew writer also references Moses briefly and hits just some of the highlights. In Hebrews chapter 11, beginning in verse 23, the Hebrew writer says, "By faith Moses, when he was born, was hidden for 3 months by his parents, because they saw he was a beautiful child, and they were not afraid of the king's edict. And by faith Moses, when he had grown up, refused to be called the son of Pharaoh's daughter, choosing rather to endure ill treatment with the people of God than to enjoy the passing pleasures of sin, considering the reproach of Christ greater riches than the treasures of Egypt, for he was looking to the reward. And by faith he left Egypt, not fearing the wrath of the king, for he endured as seeing him who is unseen. By faith he kept the Passover and the sprinkling of the blood, so that he who destroyed the firstborn would not touch them. By faith they passed through the Red Sea as though they were passing through dry land, and the Egyptians, when they attempted it, were drowned." Just from those two brief readings, we see that Moses indeed accomplished a lot of things. And he was worthy to be praised and to be regarded by the people as a great leader. In fact, Moses was one who was highly esteemed. It's interesting that after the 10 plagues in Exodus chapter 11 and verse 3, as the Egyptians are basically chasing Israel out of Egypt, like, "Get out of here, we don't want any more bad stuff to happen to us," we're told there that Moses himself was highly esteemed, not only by Pharaoh, but by all of the Egyptians. He was recognized as this great leader of God's people. In fact, it's interesting, at the end of his life, in Deuteronomy chapter 34, the book of Deuteronomy closes with this summation of Moses. It says in verse 10, "Since that time no prophet has risen in Israel like Moses, whom the Lord knew face to face. For all the signs and wonders which the Lord sent him to perform in the land of Egypt against Pharaoh, all his servants, and all his land, and for the mighty power and for the great terror which Moses performed in the sight of all Israel." There was no one like Moses as a servant of God. And in fact, earlier in the book of Deuteronomy, in Deuteronomy chapter 18, notice what Moses himself relates to the people of Israel through the inspiration of God. But in verse 15, he says, "The Lord your God will raise up for you a prophet like me from among you, from your countrymen, and you shall listen to him. And this is according to all that you asked the Lord your God in Horeb on the day of the assembly, saying, let me not hear again the voice of the Lord my God. Let me not see this great fire anymore, or I'll die. And the Lord said to me, they have spoken well. I will raise up a prophet from among their countrymen like you, and I will put my words in his mouth, and he shall speak to them all that I command him. And it shall come about that whoever will not listen to my words, which he shall speak in my name, I myself will require it of you. What's interesting is that Peter, in Acts chapter 3, quotes this very passage and applies that to the Messiah, to Jesus. Jesus was the servant that God would raise up like Moses from among the people of Israel, that God would put his word in his mouth, and that everyone would be expected, yea, required, to listen to Christ. This morning, I don't want to so much focus on some of those things that we think of as the greatness of Moses, but rather the fact that Moses was a man of humility. There's an interesting parenthetical statement in Numbers chapter 12 and verse 3. But the text says, now the man Moses was very humble, more than any man who was on the face of the earth. So when we look at Moses, what we ought to see is a picture of absolute humility. And we think about Moses and his demonstration of humility. And one of the first things that popped into my mind was when God called him to deliver the nation of Israel from Egyptian bondage in Exodus chapter 3 and in verse 4. And it's interesting there that Moses initially refuses to accept this great task from the Lord. And he gives several excuses, the first of which, in Exodus chapter 3 and verse 11, he says to God, who am I that I should go to Pharaoh, that I should bring the sons of Israel out of Egypt? God, who am I that you would pick me to do this great and awesome task? And of course, God assures him here that he would be with Moses in this effort, that he would not be alone in this task. But Moses objects again at the beginning of chapter 4, and he says, well, what then if they will not believe me or listen to what I say? For they may say, well, the Lord has not appeared to you. What if they don't believe me, God, that you've actually sent me? And so God says, well, I tell you what, I'll provide signs that you can perform to prove that I am with you. And then finally in verse 10, Moses says to the Lord, please, Lord, I have never been eloquent, neither recently nor in time past, nor since you have spoken to your servant, for I am slow of speech and slow of tongue. Moses says, I'm just not capable of doing this great task. I'm not your man, God. And we think Moses is really downplaying himself here. And we might ask the question, was this low valuation of himself, this self-doubt that he is projecting here, an attempt to just get out of the task that God had called him to do? You know, I think sometimes that's how I've looked at it. Moses is just trying to make excuses as to why he shouldn't be the one to go and do this. Ultimately, he'll say, you know, God, just please choose somebody else to go, but not me. Maybe there was a sense in which Moses was trying to get out of this task that God was calling him to. Or perhaps his low valuation of himself is related to his prior rejection and failure to win over the people of Israel and deliver them some 40 years prior to this event. You remember we read there in Acts chapter 7 in verse 22 that Moses was well educated in all the learning of the Egyptians, that he was a man mighty in power, in words, and in deeds. And yet Moses says of himself, I'm slow of speech. Who am I? Well, Moses, you're well educated. You are mighty in words and in deeds. You've received all the best education that is available to you. What's more, we learn there in Hebrews chapter 11 that he had all the privileges of being a member of the royal family in the household of Pharaoh. He was Pharaoh's daughter. He was Pharaoh's daughter's son. It's like the grandson of the king of Egypt. And certainly the Hebrew writer indicates that that came along with the opportunity to enjoy all sorts of pleasures and treasures that were to be found in Egypt. But did that also come with some authority? Some power? I think it's interesting when he, at the age of 40, decides to go and be with his brethren, the Israelites, that Moses' intent at that time is, I'm going to be the one who will deliver you. In fact, Acts chapter 7 and verse 25, that's exactly what Stephen indicates. That Moses at that point in time thought that his brethren would recognize that God was going to be using him in this position that he was in as the grandson of Pharaoh with this authority, with this power, with this education, that God was going to use him to deliver the nation of Israel. And yet, when he attempted to begin to do that, they rejected him. Who made you a ruler and a judge over us? And the first thing that he had done to try to deliver them, killing that Egyptian who was beating up a fellow Hebrew, they throw that in his face, and it gets him in a lot of hot water to the point where he has to flee. And I can imagine perhaps Moses thinking, well, maybe I was wrong. Maybe I thought too highly of myself. Maybe that wasn't God's plan. And so because of his prior failure and his prior rejection, he thinks, who am I? Why would they believe me? I'm obviously not that eloquent to be able to convince people. And I think that was all part of God's plan, though. Because God indeed had chosen Moses to work through him, demonstrating God's power, not Moses' power. After Moses' initial attempt to deliver the people, it would be another 40 years after living not as a prince, but as a shepherd, that God would call him through the burning bush to the task of delivering the Israelites. Because God wanted to achieve this feat not through political might or persuasion, but by a demonstration of his mighty hand. Notice in Exodus chapter 6, verses 1 through 8. The Lord said to Moses, "Now you shall see what I will do to Pharaoh. For under compulsion he'll let the people go, and under compulsion he will drive them out of his land." And God spoke further to Moses and said, "I am the Lord, and I appeared to Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob as God Almighty, but by my name, Lord, I did not make myself known to them. I also established my covenant with them to give them the land of Canaan, the land in which they sojourn. Furthermore, I have heard the groanings of the sons of Israel because the Egyptians are holding them in bondage, and I have remembered my covenant. Say therefore to the sons of Israel, I am the Lord, and I will bring you out from under the burdens of the Egyptians, and I will deliver you from their bondage. I will also redeem you with an outstretched arm and with great judgments. Then I will take you for my people, and I will be your God, and you shall know that I am the Lord your God who brought you out from under the burdens of the Egyptians, and I will bring you to the land which I swore to give to Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, and I'll give it to you for a possession. I am the Lord." And again in chapter 7, he indicates some of those same things talking to Moses, that it's going to be through the miracles and the demonstration of God's power, through particularly the 10 plagues as we know them, that God was going to definitively state, not only to the Israelites, but also to the Egyptians, "I am God. I am the one who is accomplishing these things." In fact, if you turn over in the book of Deuteronomy to Deuteronomy chapter 4, Moses is commenting on these events 40 years after the fact. And he says, "Indeed, ask now concerning the former days which were before you, since the day that God created man on the earth, and inquire from one end of the heavens to the other. Has anything been done like this great thing? Or has anything been heard like it? Has any people heard the voice of God speaking from the midst of fire as you have heard it and survived? Or has a God tried to go and take for himself a nation from within another nation by trials, by signs and wonders, and by war, and by a mighty hand, and by an outstretched arm, and by great terrors, as the Lord your God did for you in Egypt before your eyes? To you it was shown that you might know that the Lord, he is God, and there is no other besides him. Now I would imagine that was indeed a humbling experience for Moses. To know, have this perception of yourself that God's going to use me and my position and my education and my might to deliver Israel. And God says, nope. In fact, I'm going to bring you so low that you don't even think you're worthy of doing something or tackling something like that. So that way I can demonstrate my power through you. So that way it won't be about you, it will be about me. And I would suggest to you that that was a humbling experience for Moses. But that was not by any stretch of the imagination the greatest demonstration of humility by Moses. I think when we look at how he patiently and self-sacrificially served God's people, that's where we see the true picture of his humility. Come with me briefly as we survey just a few of the highlights in regards to how that's seen. Moses was clearly a man who was patient when he was wrong. It's interesting in Deuteronomy chapter 9, verses 6 and 7. Again, this is towards the end of 40 years of leading this people throughout the wilderness before they've gone in to take possession of the land. And Moses is reminding them of a lot of things. And he says in verse 6, "Know then, it is not because of your righteousness that the Lord your God is giving you this good land to possess. Why? For you are a stubborn people." That was Moses' estimation of the Israelites. He says, don't think that God's giving you this land because you're so great, because you're so good. In fact, you're stubborn. Remember, do not forget how you provoked the Lord your God to wrath in the wilderness. From the day that you left the land of Egypt until you arrived at this place, you have been rebellious against the Lord. And indeed, when we survey the history of Israel from the time they left Egypt to the time they were standing on the borders of the Jordan in the land of Canaan, they had been a rebellious and stubborn and obstinate people. In fact, it started with Moses even before they left Egypt. If you go back to Exodus chapter 5, the first time that Moses goes to talk to Pharaoh and says, hey, I am serving Jehovah God, and God says, let my people go. And Pharaoh says, who's God that I should listen to him? Get out of my presence. And then Pharaoh increases the labor of the Israelite slaves by denying them the straw that was necessary to make the bricks, while at the same time requiring them each day to make the same amount of bricks that they made when the materials were supplied to them. And notice the effect that this had on the Israelites. In verse 20, when they left Pharaoh's presence, that is the Israelites, the leaders of the Israelites, they've gone to Pharaoh and said, it's not fair for you to expect the same out of us and yet not give us what's necessary to perform the work. And Pharaoh said, well, it's because you're lazy. You obviously have too much time on your hands. You're asking to go out into the wilderness to serve your God and offer sacrifices to him. That's why I've increased your labor. And so when they left Pharaoh's presence, they met Moses and Aaron as they were waiting for them, and they said to them, may the Lord look upon you and judge you, for you have made us odious in Pharaoh's sight and in the sight of his servants, to put a sword in their hand to kill us. Thanks a lot, Moses. You really messed this up for us now. You've made it so much worse for us. I wish you'd just never said nothing, is the attitude. And of course, Moses' response here is to cry out to the Lord, O Lord, why have you brought harm to this people? Why did you ever send me? Ever since I came to Pharaoh to speak in your name, he has done harm to this people, and you have not delivered your people at all. Of course, we've already read in Exodus chapter 6 God's response to that. This needed to happen so that I can clearly demonstrate my power by bringing judgment against the Egyptians. And God promises to powerfully deliver Israel. And after he has done that, it's not very long after they've left Egypt, they find themselves trapped between the Red Sea and the army of Egypt that is pursuing them. And what do the people do? Well, they cry out in fear. Verse 10 of Exodus chapter 14, as Pharaoh drew near, the sons of Israel looked, and behold, the Egyptians were marching after them. They became very frightened, so the sons of Israel cried out to the Lord. And they said to Moses, "Is it because there were no graves in Egypt you've taken us away to die in the wilderness? Why have you dealt with us in this way, bringing us out of Egypt? Is this not the word we spoke to you in Egypt, saying, 'Leave us alone that we may serve the Egyptians'? For it would have been better to serve the Egyptians than to die in the wilderness." Every time an obstacle comes up, they complain. And they blame Moses for their situation. Moses' response this time is, "Shut up and look at what the Lord will do for you." And indeed, this is the occasion where the Lord parts the Red Sea, and Moses leads the nation of Israel across on dry land. And then when the Egyptian army tries to pursue them, God closes up the water over them, destroying the entire army of the Egyptians, powerfully delivering Israel yet again. But it wouldn't even be 3 days later that again an obstacle arises. In Exodus chapter 15 and verse 23, it says, "When they came to Marah, they could not drink the waters of Marah, for they were bitter. Therefore it was named Marah." And so what do the people do? They grumbled at Moses, saying, "What shall we drink?" And notice Moses' response. He again turns to the Lord. He cried out to the Lord. And the Lord answers him and showed him a tree, and he threw it into the waters, and the waters became sweet. The water's bitter. God says, "Take that tree, Moses, throw it in the water." He does that, and the water becomes sweet. They can drink it now. God provides for them. But a few weeks later, as they're wandering farther into the wilderness, they run out of food. We read in Exodus chapter 16, beginning in verse 1, "They set out from Elim, and the congregation of the sons of Israel came to the wilderness of Sin, which is between Elim and Sinai, on the 15th day of the second month after their departure from the land of Egypt. And the whole congregation of the sons of Israel grumbled against Moses and Aaron in the wilderness. And the sons of Israel said to them, 'Would that we had died by the Lord's hand in the land of Egypt, when we sat by the pots of meat, when we ate bread to the full, for you have brought us out into the wilderness to kill this whole assembly with hunger.'" Would have been better, Moses, if you had just left us in Egypt. At least if we died there, we would have died with full bellies. But you brought us out here to die of hunger. This time, the Lord is the one who responds to Moses. The Lord tells Moses exactly what he's going to do. That he's going to provide food miraculously for the people. That every morning he will provide them manna that they can go and gather up. And every evening he will send quail so that they will have meat to eat. And on this occasion, Moses relates that message to them. And from that point forward, God provides them with manna every morning and quail every evening to eat on their journey. But again, you can't even make it to chapter 17 before they're grumbling again about no water. Verse 1, "Then all the congregation of the sons of Israel journeyed by stages from the wilderness of Sin according to the command of the Lord, and they camped at Rephidim, and there was no water for the people to drink. Therefore the people quarreled with Moses and said, 'Give us water that we may drink.' And Moses said to them, 'Why do you quarrel with me? Why do you test the Lord?'" And this testing of the Lord, you see in verse 7, is that they were at this point even questioning, "Is God even with us? Is he not providing manna for you every day and quail every night? Has he not made the bitter water at Marah sweet so that you have something to drink? Did he not rescue you from the Egyptians at the Red Sea and bring you out of Egypt by the 10 plagues? Did he not do those things? And now you're wondering, is God with us?" And notice Moses' response here when the Israelites grumble. Verse 4, "He cried out to the Lord, saying, 'What shall I do to this people? A little more and they will stone me.'" They are ready to kill Moses. And on this occasion, the Lord answers Moses and says, take your staff, go to the rock in front of everybody, strike the rock, and I will bring forth water from the rock so that people can drink till they're full. And that's exactly what happens. God provides again. But you know, it wasn't just the people. Even Moses' own siblings grumbled against him. In Numbers chapter 12, we read about how Aaron and Miriam, Moses' older siblings, kind of have this attitude with Moses of like, why do you get to be above us? Did God speak only through you? And what's interesting is that God steps in on this occasion. And he rebukes Miriam and Aaron for their refusal to recognize that God is the one who made Moses superior to them. And part of this rebuke is that he strikes Miriam with leprosy all over her whole body. But what's very interesting to me is even though Moses, his authority, his position, his relationship with God has been challenged by his own siblings, and God punishes his siblings for their rejection of Moses, notice what Moses does immediately. Verse 13 of Numbers chapter 12, Moses cried out to the Lord saying, O God, heal her, I pray. His immediate concern is for his sister and her leprosy, begging God to heal her, which God ultimately does on this occasion because Moses pleaded for her. A short time later in Numbers chapter 14, after the 12 spies have been sent into the land, and 10 of the 12 spies bring back a bad report. Not that the land was bad, the land was good, but we can't take it because the people there are too strong, their cities are too fortified, it's too dangerous, we'll never be able to do it. And notice the response of the people, Numbers chapter 14, verse 1. Then all the congregation lifted up their voices and cried, and the people wept that night. And all the sons of Israel grumbled against Moses and Aaron, and the whole congregation said to them, would that we had died in the land of Egypt, or that we had died in the wilderness. Why is the Lord bringing us into this land to fall by the sword? Our wives and our little ones will become plunder. Would it not be better for us to return to Egypt? You see, Stephen's statement about how they repudiated Moses and in their hearts returned to Egypt was not a hollow charge. Every time something bad happens, they're saying, we should just go back to Egypt. In fact, verse 4, they said to one another, let us appoint a leader and return to Egypt. Let's get rid of Moses, appoint somebody else that would be willing to take us back to Egypt. Of course, the response of Moses and Aaron is to fall on their faces in the presence of the assembly, to try, along with Joshua and Caleb, the two good spies, to encourage the people that, no, we can take the land with God on our side. But notice the response of the people. Verse 10, all the congregation said to stone them with stones. And then the glory of the Lord appeared in the tent of meeting to all the sons of Israel. They don't want any of it. Don't talk to us about doing things with God. Shut up, Moses. Shut up, Aaron, Joshua, Caleb. What do you know? We don't like what you're saying. Now, I want to come back to this account at the end of the lesson to see how it ultimately ended. But we could go on enumerating time after time when the people complained and grumbled against Moses. But I want to share just one more. In Numbers chapter 20, again, they have no water. This is in Kadesh. And the congregation grumbles again. In fact, it says in verse 3 that the people thus contended with Moses and spoke, saying, if only we had perished when our brothers perished before the Lord, why then have you brought the Lord's assembly into this wilderness for us and our beasts to die here? Why have you made us come up from Egypt to bring us into this wretched place? Is not the place of grain or figs or vines or pomegranates, nor is there water to drink? And on this occasion, again, Moses, as was his fashion, turned to the Lord. What do I do, Lord? The Lord tells him this time, take your rod and go and talk to the rock, and I'll bring forth water. But Moses makes a mistake here. He doesn't follow the commands of the Lord exactly. Instead of speaking to the rock, he takes and he strikes the rock. and water comes forth. And as a result, God says to him and Aaron in verse 12, because you have not believed me to treat me as holy in the sight of the sons of Israel, therefore you shall not bring this assembly into the land which I have given them. And your heart almost breaks for Moses at this point. After everything that he's done for this people, after time being rejected by them, and him always trying to patiently serve them, he makes one mistake here, and he's prevented from entering into the promised land. And yet what's interesting to me as you continue reading Numbers and into Deuteronomy is that even though Moses knows he's not going to enter into the promised land, he continues to serve the people. I think we could look at a couple instances in his life where it's very clear that Moses had this attitude of putting the people first. The first is in his self-sacrificial service of the people. And I think the greatest illustration of this actually comes even before they receive the law in Exodus chapter 18. In Exodus chapter 18, Moses has led the people of Israel out of Egypt. They have not yet made it to Sinai, to where they're going to receive the law, but there's already some problems arising. People don't know what to do. And so Moses takes it upon himself to act as arbiter or judge for the people. We read in verse 13 of Exodus chapter 18, it came about the next day that Moses sat to judge the people, and the people stood about Moses from morning until evening. And Moses' father-in-law happened to be there on this occasion, and he saw all that was doing that Moses was doing for the people, and he said in verse 14, what is this thing that you're doing for the people? Why do you alone sit as judge, and all the people stand before you from morning until evening? And Moses said to his father-in-law, because the people come to me to inquire of God. The people want to know, what does God want them to do? And when they have a dispute, it comes to me. I judge between a man and his neighbor, and I make known the statutes of God and his laws. Now, he's doing this from morning until evening, spending all of his time telling people, this is what you do in this situation. This is what you do in this situation. This is how you handle this. This is how you handle that. And he's telling them what God wants them to know. But notice what Moses' father-in-law says to him in verse 17. He says, the thing that you're doing is not good, for you will surely wear out both yourself and these people who are with you, for the task is too heavy for you. You cannot do it alone. And so he tells Moses, you need to delegate some of this responsibility to other people. Well, who are you going to delegate that to? The leaders. Those who are over the hundreds and the thousands and the tens and over the households, how are they going to know what to do? His father-in-law says, first, what you need to do is you need to sit down and you need to teach these guys the law. You need to teach them what God has said in his statutes so that they can understand it, so that they can make application of it for themselves to themselves. And then that way they can help you judging all of these smaller and lesser cases. And if there's a case that's too difficult for them to understand or for them to render judgment on, those they can bring to you and you can render judgment from God on those things. But by delegating, instead of taking all of the burden on yourself to the point where you wear yourself out, you'll be able to actually serve the people more effectively. And it's interesting to me that at a later time, Moses would again feel overwhelmed by this responsibility of having to lead the people and judge the people. In this occasion, he's actually ready to give up. It says in Numbers chapter 11 in verse 10, now Moses heard the people weeping throughout their families, each man at the doorway of his tent, and the anger of the Lord was kindled greatly, and Moses was displeased. Verse 11 of Numbers chapter 11, so Moses said to the Lord, why have you been so hard on your servant? Why have I not found favor in your sight that you have laid the burden of all this people on me? Was it I who conceived all this people? Was it I who brought them forth that you should say to me, carry them in your bosom as a nurse carries a nursing infant to the land which you swore to their fathers? Where am I to get meat to give all this people? For they weep before me, saying, give us meat that we may eat. I alone am not able to carry all this people because it's too burdensome for me. So if you're going to deal thus with me, please kill me at once if I have found favor in your sight, and do not let me see my wretchedness. Moses was the kind of guy that would expend himself for the sake of others. He's kind of at the end of his rope here. He says, I don't know how much more I can give to serve this people. And on this occasion, God steps in and says, you know what? I'm going to take some of the spirit that I put on you, and I'm going to give some of that to 70 elders of the people, and they will help you to bear this burden. You won't have to bear it alone. Another way in which we see Moses putting the people first is when he acts as intercessor for the people. We're going to have to go through these next two really quickly here because time's getting away from me. We remember the debacle of the golden calf in Exodus chapter 32. Moses is up on Mount Sinai receiving the laws. He's been up there for 40 days and 40 nights. The people think, oh, he's gone. Aaron, make a god for us that can lead us back to Egypt. And Aaron fashions a golden calf. And God hears their rejoicing and their celebration. And he says to Moses, go down quickly, because this people of yours has already rebelled against me. They've made an idol, just like I told them not to do. And now, watch out, I'm ready to destroy them, and Moses, I'll make a nation out of you. Moses says, hold on a second, God. Please, before you destroy everybody, think about how that would affect the nation. Think about how that would affect your name and your reputation. Would that not give your enemies, especially the Egyptians, reasons to mock you and say, oh, God brought them out of Egypt, but he couldn't bring them into the land? And because Moses intercedes for the people, God relents. But what I find so interesting about that instance is that Moses was clearly not thinking about himself. That would have been a good proposition. Moses, I'm going to destroy all these people and I will make you into a great nation. Wow, just like Abraham. But Moses doesn't think about himself. He says, no, 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 God. Think about the people. Think about your reputation. And please forgive them. It's interesting, another occasion, coming back to that Numbers 14, when the people refuse to go in and take possession of the land, when they're ready to stone Moses and Aaron and Joshua and Caleb and go back to Egypt. Again, God, his anger is burning against him, and he's ready to destroy them. He says to Moses, I know I offered this to you once. I'm going to offer it again. I'll destroy this stubborn people, and I'll make you into a great nation. And Moses again says, no, Lord, please remember your promises that you made to Abraham and Isaac and to Jacob. Fulfill your word. Be the God who is loving and compassionate and forgiving and merciful, so that your greatness will be seen by everybody. Again, refusing to accept honor for himself so that God would be honored, so that the people would be spared. Of course, it's interesting. God says, you know, I will relent. I'm not going to wipe them out right now, but I'm going to cause them to wander into the wilderness for 40 years so that everybody who's over the age of 20 will die. Nobody who's over the age of 20 today will actually get to enter into the land of Canaan, to the promised land, except for Joshua and Caleb, the two good spies. Who else was over 40 at that time? Moses. He was about 80 years old. If he read between the lines, he would have realized, I'm not going to get to enter into the promised land. Even though it wouldn't be till years later, at the waters of Kadesh, where he struck the rock instead of speaking to it, that God said, okay, because of this, you're not going to enter in. God apparently knew already here that that was going to happen. And yet, even though the promise is not extended to Moses that you too will get to enter the land, Moses still faithfully leads God's people. And even until the end, Moses is asking God if he can still maybe go into the land. And God says, no, you're not going to get to go in because you treated me not as holy at Kadesh. But I tell you what I'll do, Moses. I'll let you see the land from afar. And so if you go to Deuteronomy chapter 34, beginning in verse 1, it says, now Moses went up from the plains of Moab to Mount Nebo to the top of Pisgah, which is opposite Jericho. And the Lord showed him all the land, Gilead as far as Dan, and all Naphtali, and the land of Ephraim and Manasseh, and all the land of Judah as far as the western sea, and the Negev, and the plain in the valley of Jericho, the city of palm trees as far as Zoar. And the Lord said to him, this is the land which I swore to Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, saying, I will give it to your descendants. I have let you see it with your eyes, but you shall not go over there. And so Moses, the servant of the Lord, died there in the land of Moab, according to the word of the Lord. And he, that is God, buried him in the valley in the land of Moab, opposite Beth Peor. But no man knows his burial place to this day. And although Moses was 120 years old when he died, his eye was not dim, nor his vigor abated. So the sons of Israel wept for Moses in the plains of Moab 30 days. And when the days of weeping and mourning, then the days of weeping and mourning for Moses came to an end. Even though we may want to weep for Moses too, because after 120 years of sacrificing of himself and putting other people first and putting God first in his life, he wasn't allowed to enter into the land of promise. Due to arguably his one failure at Kadesh. But we need to learn the lessons that we can learn from this man of God. And the takeaway for this morning that I would like for us to think about is that we need to strive to imitate Moses, especially in his humility and his patience and his self-sacrificial service of both God and God's people, as we seek to be a humble people today, serving one another, and by doing so, serving our God.